This episode is brought to you by Verizon. Get a Verizon Business Unlimited plan from the network businesses rely on. Hey, Monica, with 5G Ultra Wideband in many more cities, you get up to 10 times the speed at no extra cost.
Hello, downloads in no time.
Plus, unlimited premium data and hotspot data to keep the signal flowing and your teams going. Come in or book an appointment with a Verizon business expert to find the right plan for your team. 5G Ultra Wideband available in over 1,700 cities with Business Unlimited Pro 2.0 smartphone plan. Speed comparison is to median Verizon 4G LTE speeds. Download speeds may vary depending upon network and coverage conditions and content optimization for 5G Ultra Wideband.
Finding the right person for the job isn't easy. Just ask someone who hired a monster truck driver to deliver pizza.
And the neighbors are going wild. You can hear that engine from a mile away, Fran.
And he's foregoing the driveway and heading right up the lawn and over the azaleas. What a power move.
But if you've got an insurance question, you can always count on your local GEICO agent. They can bundle your policies, which could save you hundreds.
With 6-foot tires and a roll cage, this pizza guy could quite literally crush the competition.
For expert help with all your insurance needs, visit geico.com/local today.
Over to our election special. Anne is going to be booted up momentarily, and I'm going to take this opportunity to just give you a rundown of who's on deck. We have Chris Crane from Forefront Ventures, David Culver from Canopy Growth, John Sullivan from Cresco Labs, and Nick Etten from Acreage Holdings. And we're bringing in Anne right now. I see her little icon there. She's got the hat on, and there she is.
Hi, Tony. How are you?
I'm feeling a little embarrassed. Your microphone looks way cooler than mine.
I'm super professional.
Yes,
super professional. I don't know if you know who I am. Yeah.
No. Well, for the folks who don't know who you are, I'm a fan of your podcast. Tell those who are listening what you're about, what your show's about, and let them know you're real.
Yeah. So we co-host, produced and co-hosted The Green Rush, a podcast that is the intersection of cannabis culture and the capital markets now for 3 years, which I can't believe. We recorded our 150th episode a couple of weeks ago. And thank you so much. And our day jobs this is a passion project for us, but our day jobs are at KCSA Strategic Communications, where we have a public and investor relations agency, and we specialize in the cannabis. We have a big specialty in the cannabis space. So we've kind of grown up in the industry over the last 7 years and decided a couple of years ago to start a podcast to wade in. And it's just allowed us to talk to some really, really cool people who are building this industry.
Yeah, you got some really great guests. And I listened to the episode most recently with the Cannabis Wine Company.
House of Saka.
That was a great episode. Of all the episodes that you've done, all 150 of them, I don't want to put you on the spot, but what are some of your favorites?
The high profile ones kind of stick out. Earl Blumenauer, who, has been so instrumental to this industry. He's been on a couple of times. He's a great friend of the show. We recently did Kevin Smith, who as a Jersey girl.
So jealous.
He was so cool. And our show's usually 45 minutes to an hour. And he just ran for an hour and 40 minutes. And our producer's like texting us being like, let him go. It's great.
He's a talker. Silent Bob is not very silent.
Silent Bob
is,
he's making up for it. He's making up for it sure. Jim Belushi was incredible. A lot of people, think when they think of celebrities getting into the cannabis space, it sometimes doesn't feel that authentic. It feels like they're just slapping their name on a brand, and some of them are doing that, and God bless.
Yeah.
But this is really something that's a passion project for Jim. And you really just got a great feeling from him that he wants to do good in the world. And that this is part of his giving back. And that was a real pinch me kind of moment too. So
yeah, and I think that's a great point, because that's how we started this whole Benzinga Cannabis 2-hour special off. We talked about the authenticity of celebrity backed brands, and there's a difference between celebrities actually doing the work and just slapping their name on it.
Yeah.
So there was the news today about, and I'm not saying that they're just slapping their name on it, because she's a CEO and professional in her own right, but Gwyneth Paltrow is involved with Can, the beverage tonic, along with Rebel Wilson and Ruby Rose, which I thought was kind of cool news announcement. And the guests today on the Benzinga Cannabis Hour, they work with celebrities in their own right. So it's this big movement where there's a difference between folks who are just hawking products and folks who really want to put good products out there.
Yeah. And I mean, and Jim is an example of a guy who is like in the soil every day. He plays music for his plants. He names them. I mean, there is a real culture around, you know, what he's building there. And, you know, and I do think that for some of these celebrities, the brands, it works. It aligns with, you know, who they are as people. It is authentic in a lot of different ways, which I think is great. It's what this industry needs.
Yeah, and true ambassadors of the industry, yeah. Are guys like Snoop Dogg and Tommy Chong. Like, there's an authenticity, yep, that they have. And sure. Today, definitely authentic guests today. I mean, the folks behind Cresco Labs and Forefront, what else do we, Canopy and Acreage Holdings. I mean, we got a good lineup, and we're going to be talking about some very serious topics. What do you think? What could these folks bring to the dialogue in terms of what the cannabis industry is in for post November 3rd?
Wow, big question. I mean, I think that, you know, I think the next 2 weeks are going to be really interesting, because I don't think we're going to know on November 3rd. I hope I'm wrong, but I hope, you know, and I think there is going to be this huge reset for the country, almost regardless of what happens. So I think that that these guys are, you know, have been in the industry a really long time, and they've weathered other storms. So this is just another storm that they're probably all really geared up to go through. And you know, I think it's going to be really interesting. There's a lot of caveats when we ask about predictions. There's a lot of you know, politics is almost just sucking out the oxygen in every room. So,
yes.
You know, I think that, right? I mean, everywhere you talk, what are you doing next week? Or how are you, you know, we have, yeah, the day off, and I'm like, I'm so grateful we have the day off, but I'm also very, I want to be busy. I've joked that I'll be stress eating until I start stress drinking. So, you know,
what are your favorite stress foods?
Pizza. I am a big fan of the Trader Joe's cheese crunchies, the baked ones.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Trader Joe's ice cream sandwiches, yeah, were mine for a while. That was my, okay. That was a great, okay, snack.
I respect that.
Yeah. But we have a couple of topics we're going to get to. We're going to address the MORE Act and the STATES Act and what's at stake for those, depending on the winner. We're going to talk about, I guess, the first time, I believe, in history that decriminalizing cannabis was mentioned on a major platform during the vice presidential debate. What else? I mean, there's just an endless list of topics. I mean, we have them for how long? I think we're going for an hour. I don't know when we're bringing them in. What's the setup here? It's about, I think they're coming in a little bit, right?
I think so.
Well, we'll wait on word from that.
Let's see. Okay. And I'm really excited to talk about the state issues and the ballot initiatives. You know, I think that from a federal standpoint, probably nothing's going to change in the next year or six, yeah, months. So I think these state races are still really important. So let's hear what they have.
We also have, I came out with a story recently that there's a delay sometimes in when cannabis is legalized, either medically or recreationally. You know, it can go for months, maybe even
I mean, just
years.
Ask Massachusetts, right?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm getting a question from my producer. We can bring them in now. I'll give them a shout out, and hopefully they're on deck, and we'll get this conversation going. We have John queued up, David. Let's see who else is on board. Hi, John and David.
Hello.
Welcome, guys. How are you?
Really good. Thank you.
Hey, guys.
We got the kitchen backdrop. All right.
It's the kitchen. All politics is kitchen conversations, right? It's the kitchen table.
I love it.
David, nice to talk to you again. We had a nice little fireside chat last time.
Good to see you as well. Thanks for having me today.
Oh, thanks for joining. So yeah, let's tee this conversation off. Let's get the ball rolling. I had told Anne before we hit record that one of the things that really struck me about, I guess, the past month because cannabis is so in the dialogue now in terms of legalization. And I was wrestling with how to really tee off this conversation, because on one end, the big topic is decriminalization was mentioned in the vice presidential debate. And that was a big moment for cannabis professionals. But there was another moment in another debate, the first one, where the candidates were discussing drug use. And I think cannabis has something to do with that as well, because cannabis, as you know, is often used as a healthier option versus opioids. And one candidate, the incumbent President Donald Trump, was quite frankly, for lack of a better word, attacking the other candidate, Joe Biden, and his son's drug addiction. And as company execs who are involved in that space in terms of what's in medical cannabis and how that is and how drugs are used in referred to in the country, what was your take on that? Because I think it's very interesting to discuss just the tone from the two different parties. One was very much about shame and criminalization versus the other, which was about being, you know, loving and rehabilitation versus incarceration. And we can start with John Sullivan or David. Anybody can jump in if you want.
Yeah, sure. You know, I'll say, you know, I think one of the things all of us deal with on a daily basis is that there are states and places where people can walk into a store and purchase cannabis legally for adult use, recreational purposes. And there are still other places where people are going to jail for cannabis in the same country. It's absurd. I think are still all involved in conversations all day with policymakers who still have kind of that attitude that Trump had, or at least he showed during that debate, where drugs, are a disparagement, or like we can't have an honest conversation about, you know, the medical uses of marijuana or how it helps people get off of opiates. You know, there's enough data out there to show all of those things now, and yet there's still, you know, we still work every day to demystify, destigmatize cannabis on a daily basis. And it's one reason this election is important. You know, you touched on it a little bit. We're seeing several states with referendums on the ballot. All the poll numbers suggest that, you know, legalizing cannabis, you know, polls in this, you know, in the high 60s everywhere you go. You know, it's like the narratives have changed pretty much for the common man, but it's certainly there are still a lot of policymakers that don't have that view.
Right. We can go down the line here, David or Chris or Nick. Let's start with David.
Yeah, I'll just add to John's comments, which I agree with completely. I just always go back to the normalization. And that's why this election is so important. You know, you've got the five ballot initiatives. You've got a very significant contrast between the Republican candidate, President Trump, and Vice President Biden, as you laid out in your question. And a lot for the cannabis community is going to hinge on what happens on November the 3rd. But the more states that are able to embrace medical or adult use, the more normalized this product becomes and the more comfortable people with it are across the country. But we as a nation need to make sure that we do not legalize this product without dealing with the decriminalization of it as well and the expungement of records, to John's point that he made earlier. There's, you know, still hundreds of thousands of people that are arrested every single year for nonviolent cannabis offense. It's typically four times more than all violent crime put together. There are still tens of thousands of people sitting in jail for cannabis related offenses. And that's just, it's got to stop. I was very heartened when I heard Senator Harris talking about decriminalization, as you referenced in your opening remarks. And I do think that this campaign, if they are elected, they are going to take some very significant steps next year.
Yeah.
So while we're talking about if they're elected, let's say Biden wins, but the Republicans hold the Senate. What happens in terms of the MORE Act? And then what happens in terms of the STATES Act? What can we expect in the first, year? I guess I'll throw that to Chris and then maybe to Nick.
Yeah, unfortunately, under that scenario, I'm fairly pessimistic about our chances of getting anything passed. I think the best case that we could hope for in a scenario where Mitch McConnell remains Senate Majority Leader would be the States Act. But I actually think our chances of getting the States Act passed in a situation where the Democrats hold the House, the Republicans hold the Senate, and there's a Biden administration is actually worse than it is today with the Trump administration. And that's not an indictment on Biden. It's an indictment of Mitch McConnell. Right now, the number one reason why Mitch McConnell would have to advance something like the States Act through the Senate is to provide a win to Cory Gardner, a Republican senator who is endangered and in a close reelection fight. Gardner is likely going to lose in November. The polling there is fairly overwhelmingly favorable towards Hickenlooper. And with Gardner no longer there, and you add in that, you know, Mitch McConnell has quite the history of being an obstructionist when the opposition party is in the White House. I think that he will likely view any meaningful cannabis reform legislation as something that the Democrats could claim as a victory, and therefore he will oppose it. It's not necessarily ideological on cannabis. It's simply he will not want to give any victories to a Biden administration, regardless of what the issue is. So I think, unfortunately, that is probably a worse scenario for reform than what we have right now. And likely the only thing that we could get accomplished in that situation where the Republicans hold the Senate would be safe banking, which I still think is possible under that scenario, only because I think we can get that done through some sort of larger omnibus spending bill. But something like states or more, that likely has to be done as a standalone, and that I don't think will fly under a McConnell-controlled Senate with a Democratic White House.
Mm. Nick, what do you think? Make us feel better.
I was going to say, I don't disagree with Chris, but maybe I'll try to be a bit more optimistic. I think there are significant hurdles and roadblocks in front of us. Look, this is Congress that has a pretty bad track record regardless of which party is leading the charge in getting legislation passed, especially groundbreaking legislation as it relates to cannabis. So I'm a bit more optimistic. I think there's a lot of room in the conversation for Republicans as much as there are Democrats. I think ultimately they'll come around to this when they begin to pay attention to the fact that this industry has created tens of thousands of jobs over the past few years and is delivering millions of dollars in revenue into coffers at the state level. They'll understand, at least from their perspective, what could help them get over the hurdle as it relates to cannabis. Look, cannabis can be many things to many different audiences. It doesn't have to be one thing alone. So I'm a bit more optimistic, but I think regardless of who wins on Tuesday, we're all going to get up and we're going to continue to grind away as we can in making change happen at the federal level. But we've all been grinding away daily on the state level, and we're going to continue to focus on the states that are in play this year. And that's New York, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, and some others.
David, let's kick it over to you a little bit. You're based in DC, and I would be remiss not to ask you this, but what's the vibe like over there? Is it sort of like a calm before the storm? Like I can't imagine it would be pleasant.
Well, it's an interesting place to live. Thank you. And I feel like I need to apologize when I used to travel around the world telling people where I am. But it is indeed the calm before the storm. Look, this is going to be a very historic election for us in the United States. Let's just look at a few things. Number one is the money. Unprecedented amounts of money have gone into this campaign on both sides, but especially for Biden. And I think that it's important to note that let's not think about the ad buys anymore. Let's think about the paid get out the vote efforts that they're going to be able to do in the battleground states. Let's think about the paid legal that they're going to put into state capitals, because there's been hundreds of legal challenges that have already been filed. This is something that Democratic presidential campaigns haven't been able to do before. So that is historic. The early voting is historic. 70 million people have already voted 37 million in the battleground states. 25% of those new voters or the voters are new. So this tells me that this could potentially be an enormous voter turnout. And if that's the case, it's going to swing towards Biden. And then the other thing I'll say is that the numbers really haven't moved in a long time. We haven't seen that kind of October movement that we saw in 2016. The president's approval ratings are still at 43 with a 53 disapproval. That's a clear danger zone for an incumbent. And we're sitting here a week before the election, seeing Joe Biden go into Georgia and Texas. The Democrats haven't won Georgia since 1992. And I think they have a legitimate shot winning this time around. I don't think they have a shot at Texas, but you know, again, it's within the margin of error. So I think the pollsters have been careful about kind of navigating their poll numbers and making sure that they have adjusted for that quiet Trump support. And I think that it's going to be closer than what the poll numbers are showing. But it's for the reasons I just outlined, I think this will be arguably the most historic presidential election that I've certainly ever seen, and we may see in quite some time.
So, you know, so that's at this at the federal level. If we could dive into some of the state elections, Chris, you had a great column in Forbes a while back outlining the different ballot measures that are in the states, Arizona, Montana, New Jersey, South Dakota, Mississippi for medical. Can you just quickly walk us through how those are polling? That'll make us feel better.
It will make us feel better because the polling actually looks quite good, almost across the board. So New Jersey, where the legislature, despite 2 years of trying, was unable to get their members together to pass something. And I should say in that case, it wasn't because there wasn't majority approval for legalization. There was majority approval for legalization in the legislature. It was that they couldn't agree on the details. And so they kicked it to the voters. Ironically, the voters are getting a one paragraph initiative, and that's going to send it back to the legislature to figure out those details that they couldn't get the first time around. So when we talk about delays in implementation, I expect we may see those in Jersey post-ballot initiative passing. But on the initiative itself, it's been polling north of 60% pretty consistently in polls. I don't expect it'll actually get over 60% just because no legalization initiative has crossed the 60% threshold in any state yet. But I do expect a pretty resounding victory in New Jersey. Montana is also polling well north of 50% in just about every poll. Same in Arizona. Arizona and Montana are redder states. Montana redder than Arizona these days, which has become pretty purple. But what we've seen across the country is when a state has a fairly robust medical marijuana market, and the public is accustomed to having cannabis commerce in their communities, they are more open to voting for full legalization. And you have a longstanding medical marijuana industry in both Arizona and Montana. In fact, Arizona is now the largest medical-only market in the United States. You can't drive through Phoenix without seeing billboards for dispensaries and medical cannabis products. So, and in Arizona, you know, we failed there 4 years ago with about 48.6%. I think we're on very solid footing in Arizona and Montana. Mississippi's medical marijuana initiatives are polling north of 70%. They do have two competing initiatives on the ballot, but that's okay in this case because the way that works is their first ask, do you want to legalize medical marijuana? And if that's above 50%, then they go to the secondary question, which is which initiative do you support? And the one of those that gets the more the higher vote total will win, which we think will be the Citizens Initiative because they've had a lot more money behind their campaign. And then in South Dakota, medical marijuana has been polling north of 70% as well. So we expect that'll pass. Adult use in South Dakota is the only one that I think is a true toss-up right now. If I had to place a bet on it, I would bet that we don't win that one, for two reasons. One, because there is no medical marijuana system there. There's no medical cannabis commerce in the state yet, so people aren't used to seeing it in their communities. But also because you have medical on the ballot and adult use, my guess is that there's going to be a portion of the population that decides, let's go slow. I'm going to vote for medical, but I'm going to wait a little bit for adult use. And so my guess is when this all comes in, we probably lose that one somewhere in the 46 to 48% range. But I hope I'm wrong. I really hope that we wake up on November 4th or I don't know, January 4th, whenever we actually know who wins the elections this year. And we find out that we've swept all five of those ballot initiatives. So lots of reason for optimism there.
All right. Well, hopefully we'll get optimism with the next topic because I want to switch it over to investors. And I'm going to start with John. Cannabis investors are obviously watching the election closely. What do you think of a Biden administration does to the markets? Because typically Republicans are thought of as the pro-business party, but that's not the case with the cannabis industry, right? So what do we have to expect for the markets on the either the, you know, with a Biden administration and with the Trump administration? Now, I'm going to start with you, John, and then we'll kick it over to Nick, and then I would love to get David and Chris's takes after that.
Sure. I think cannabis investors, a Biden administration, I'd be pretty bullish on the cannabis market. And, it wasn't too long ago that Jeff Sessions was the attorney general, and there was a lot of uncertainty for our industry. I think, one thing a Biden administration does is it brings a certain level of certainty and comfort with cannabis. We know that we're not going to go backwards, right? It gives us that security that there is going to be at least incremental progress going forward. So I think, a side note to that is, one of the things that's happened throughout the country is we were deemed essential businesses. In the states that we were in, right? So if I'm a cannabis investor, I know all of these governors have already gone out and said, these are essential businesses. They need to remain open during a pandemic. And now you put the Biden administration on top of that. I think you see both state and a federal trend that is definitely trending in the right way for the cannabis industry. So, from that vantage point, I would continue to be bullish, or actually would become very bullish. Trump staying in or reelect Trump. I think maybe even more importantly to Chris's earlier point, a Mitch McConnell still held Senate. Things just aren't going to happen that quickly. Again, I think the tide's turning. Even Republican governors were calling us essential, right? You look at Pennsylvania, Ohio, Ohio, certainly Republican governor. You look at those trends. That tells me that the tide is turning even then. It's just going to be much slower, much more incremental growth. It's a likelihood of legislation, as Chris said earlier, maybe we get safe banking as part of the Economic Recovery Act. I'm pushing people to use terms like Cannabis Recovery Act. The more we talk about that, when you look at the job growth that we're seeing from the cannabis industry, the amount of jobs created, the tax revenue that's brought in. I mean, every state, every municipality needs this now. And to think that they won't be telling whoever the president is, that we need cannabis reform and cannabis to happen now for jobs and for health and for, all the benefits that it brings. I think we see growth either way. But yes, a Biden administration, to me, I would be a lot more bullish on.
Nick, chime in here.
I think whichever direction it goes, if as an investor, I would go long on cannabis. Definitely a Biden presidency is a smoother path, and we're going to see more activity and legislation, I believe, move faster. But the reality is, John brought something up that I don't think a lot of people have been talking about, and it's kind of gotten lost in the news cycle the last few months, which is this has been a watershed moment for cannabis during COVID. We have gone from a product that was essentially illegal throughout most of the country a few years ago to being deemed an essential product and service coming out of the gates with COVID. The only state that we faced a delay in was Massachusetts. It was about a month. The rec markets or adult use markets were then opened up. But I think that I think what's been demonstrated over the past 7 months by the industry and having been deemed essential during COVID is absolutely fundamental shift. And if I would say to all investors, continue to go long on cannabis.
David?
I'll just add a couple points to all of that. I agree with everything these two fine gentlemen have said. I think that we may see some action in the lame duck period as well. So in the CBD space, we could see dietary supplement lane being opened up potentially. There's a lot of chatter about that right now. And once the politics are behind these elected officials, they may be able to act on that. Also, there is an ironclad promise from House leadership to pass the MORE Act. During the lame duck period, that'll be a historic vote.
And that's something that's going to get a lot of attention for publicly traded cannabis stocks. And then I think everybody saw this week that if the Senate does flip, Senator Schumer made it very clear that he's going to shepherd through cannabis full legalization package in the first 6 months of next year. So there's all sorts of events that could potentially happen, especially if there's a Dem sweep. That's why, again, as we started this conversation, why November 3rd is so critical. And then the final thing I'll say is that let's be very clear that there are a lot of very well-financed consumer packaged goods companies that are sitting on the sidelines and watching this very, very closely and getting ready to jump in. And once that begins, it's just going to snowball, in my opinion. And as Nick said, I think it's important that you go long on cannabis.
Well, Chris, let me tweak the question a little bit. Like, say you have Mitch McConnell in a room right now, or on Zoom, rather. Do you echo the points that these gentlemen made? How do you convince Mr. Charisma himself that cannabis legalization is the way to go?
Well, I think you appeal to the economic benefits that the country sees from legalized cannabis, and I think one of the ways that we do that is we could really point out the fact that despite the fact that we have legal cannabis in states all across the country, the lack of federal legalization is really ceding control of what should be the next great American industry to Canadians. Right now, the largest cannabis companies in the world are Canadian companies. And that is because access to the emerging global cannabis markets are essentially off limits to American companies. We cannot get licenses in places like Germany, in a lot of places in Latin America, but the Canadian companies are all playing there, and they are sitting there and they are gaining a tremendous advantage that is not available to these American businesses. So, obviously there's things like jobs, job creation, increased tax revenue, right? All of the benefits that we know about, but there is an emerging global cannabis industry, and it is still small right now. I mean, if you look at European cannabis markets, or Germany is by far the largest cannabis market in Europe right now, and they have something like 100,000 registered patients in a country of over 80 million people. So, and that is far and away the largest in Europe. Most countries in Europe have patient counts in the hundreds, let alone in the thousands. So there's still plenty of time for the United States and for American companies to become real players on the global scene. But that is simply impossible under this current system of federal illegality around cannabis. And so we need to level the playing field there, not to mention just valuations, right? I mean, the Canadian companies generally are worth multiples of what their American counterparts are, despite the fact that the United States has 10 times the population of Canada. And that's because the Canadian valuations are, at this point, are largely based on speculation around how much of the global market share they're going to be able to grab, whereas American companies are being valued on secondary exchanges, based on, which limited license states that they're in. So we are really losing out on a tremendous potential opportunity to dominate this global cannabis market. And if we don't act soon, the our Canadian counterparts are simply going to eat our lunch.
More than they already are. Nick, you head up government affairs over at Acreage. Let's say Biden wins. What does November 4th look like for you? Assuming we know, what does the day after we know look like for you guys in terms of strategy?
I don't think the strategy is going to shift in any way. We're going to continue to chip away at legalization at the federal level. But on November 4th, we're going to wake up and we're going to grind away at our operations in our core states. New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Pennsylvania. Look, I mean, this is federal legalization is important, but this is still absolutely a state market. We've got multiple states at play as it relates to legalization. New York coming up this year, I think it's going to be really difficult for Governor Cuomo to not make this a key component of his budget, given the revenue shortfall that New York is looking like. As Chris mentioned earlier, the numbers in New Jersey look great, and we're working on the enabling legislation right now. And I think it's going to set off a domino effect on the East Coast. And you've got states coming into play, such as Virginia and Maryland, that people haven't even been talking about. So when you talk about the day after, we're going to wake up and just keep grinding away in our core markets.
Is that right? Are you, you know, aside from, you know, waking up and nursing your hangover?
I'm sorry. It kind of cut out there for a second. Could you repeat the question?
Oh, sorry. No, I'm just opening it up to everybody else. So John, Chris, David, you know, do all of you guys feel that way, that, you know, it's really no different, you know, day after election results, you know, you're going back to the grind?
Yeah, you know, I'll just say the education process changes a little bit. You know, there's going to be a lot of new faces one way or another. You know, I think you're likely to see some new U.S. senators who might not be as familiar with this process. You know, our jobs every day, it's meeting with state, local, national figures and really educating them about cannabis. There's still a lot of questions out there. There's still a lot of uncertainty, even, you know, by some of the moderate Democrats who are in the U.S. Senate. So, you know, showing them what cannabis can do, giving them the numbers of the jobs that we've created, et cetera. You know, so the faces change. I think to Nick's point, you know, kind of the strategy is the same. You know, it's we keep hitting those same points with as many people will listen to us and try and give them a roadmap to what could be just what should be a phenomenal worldwide industry based here in the United States, as Chris said.
Yeah, and I'll just add to that. This is indeed going to be the same playbook, but with a couple caveats. If this is a Dem sweep, I'm going to wake up on November 4 and I'm going to be thinking about what these executive orders could look like from the White House, whether to decriminalize cannabis or to reschedule. All of the information that we've seen out of this campaign thus far has been political rhetoric, and I'd like to see something in writing. What does it mean? And that's something that, you know, all of us will be looking at with our legal counsels to try to figure that out. The second thing I'm going to be thinking about, and I already have been with many of my colleagues on this panel, is what does the regulatory structure specific to cannabis look like? So the MORE Act, which we talked about early on, that punts the entire regulatory structure to the tobacco model. Well, cannabis is not tobacco. It's very different. And we need to make sure that we have a federal solution there that actually is sophisticated and is specific to cannabis so that we don't have the same situation the beverage alcohol has. I worked in alcohol for 16 years. I spent most of my career trying to nibble around the edges to tweak a system from 1933. Let's create a 21st century model that actually works for cannabis. And that's the other big piece. And I think that leaders on the Hill are ready to start to think about that regulatory structure, the tax structure, et cetera, as we go into whether it's the MORE Act 2.0 or any other piece of legislation that they're thinking about in the next Congress.
Yeah, I would echo what David said. I think that's exactly right. You know, from a day-to-day operations standpoint, I agree with Nick. You know, we continue doing what we're doing, focusing on core markets, focus on our operational strategy, right? It's going to take a long time. Even if something significant gets passed, it's going to take a long time for it to get implemented. And so I don't think there's much of a change in day-to-day business operations. On the political side, though, you know, I think we need to be immediately thinking about how do we interface with this new administration if it is a Biden administration? Because I think that, you know, even if we have a situation where we have a Mitch McConnell controlled Senate, you know, I'm very pessimistic about our ability to get any meaningful reform passed through Congress. But there's a lot that can be done at the executive level, a lot that can be done through executive orders on things like 280E, on things like banking, on enforcement, on interstate commerce. And I would say strangely optimistic about our ability to get that done in a Biden administration. And I say strangely because, you know, I was working at Normal in, you know, from 2000 to 2006. And back then, like, we had two enemies on the Democratic side of the aisle in the Senate, and that was Dianne Feinstein and Joe Biden. They were the worst Democrats in the Senate, if not all of Congress. Feinstein still sucks on this issue, but Biden has gotten better. I like to say his position today is basically Barack Obama's position in 2008, which is pretty unacceptable for a Democrat in 2020. But we can work with it, right? His vice president would have been the sponsor of the MORE Act. And the Democratic, and the thing that makes me most optimistic is that Democratic Party leadership by and large, and the Democratic Party by and large, has really come a long way since the Obama administration on this issue. And if Joe Biden is known for one thing, it's really understanding where the center of the Democratic Party is. And people like to talk about Joe Biden as a centrist, and that's true, but he's kind of a Democratic Party centrist. And I don't see Joe Biden drawing a line in the sand on this issue and being willing to fully take on his party on this. So I think there is a chance that we get something done. You know, the last 4 years, there's been virtually nothing done at the federal level, which, you know, if you told me that 12 years ago, I'd have said, that's terrific, right? Nothing was a huge improvement over what we had in the Clinton administration and in the Bush administration, where they were actively, you know, cracking down on medical cannabis commerce and sending in, you know, DEA thugs with guns to go raid dispensaries. And we had to do raid trainings for dispensary workers back in the day. That wasn't that long ago, right? But those days are gone. The Trump administration, to their credit, has largely been a continuation of the Obama administration when it comes to their enforcement over cannabis. But I think we've gotten to the point now where doing nothing is no longer enough. And I think if we have 4 more years of a Trump administration, we're probably looking at 4 more years of doing nothing. I would be a little bit concerned in a second term Trump administration about Attorney General Barr, who has shown that he is willing to use things like the antitrust department of the DOJ to go after cannabis businesses, you know, not sending in the jackboot thugs from the DEA, but doing it in a way that is much more under the radar. You had a whistleblower go before Congress and say that that Attorney General Barr has real animosity towards this industry. And I think him being empowered in a second term without the prospect of a Trump reelection, I worry a little bit about what he might do. You know, again, I don't think he sends back in the troops. But there are a lot of ways that the DOJ can mess with the industry. But outside of that, I think it's largely status quo. But status quo is no longer good enough. And I am optimistic that under a Biden administration, we can get real change accomplished through executive actions and through executive orders, even if Congress isn't willing to play ball.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, I mean, you mentioned, you know, which politicians can play ball and who would draw lines in the sand. And it kind of reminded me of something that David actually brought up on our fireside chat at the Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference, that Biden was actually the guy who came forward and supported gay marriage at a time. I know it's not, you know, it's not an industry related thing, but it is, you know, it's comparable to, I guess, a politician tweaking a point of view and tweaking it, their approach without, at the risk of sounding like, you know, they're flip-flopping or something. But I want to hear your thoughts on that, on just approaching these officials, as you guys said, getting them to change their minds. Because Biden certainly has done that in the past. He was the one that catalyzed that in the Obama administration for gay marriage. What would be the equivalent here? I mean, it sounds like he's on board with Senator Harris and what she wants to do. John Boehner was a Republican politician who is now very much involved in CBD. Just down the line, give me your thoughts on what it's like to, what needs to happen in terms of changing a politician's point of view on this.
You want me to start?
Yeah, I think that, I'm sorry, I apologize. David would be a good person to start because you're the one who sort of inspired that follow-up question.
Okay, so I think I mentioned earlier, everything that we've heard out of the Biden-Harris ticket thus far has been political rhetoric. And the furthest that they've been willing to go during this campaign silliness is decriminalization and rescheduling. So after this is over with, and if they win, I'm certainly gonna go back to them and I'm gonna have the conversation about where are you really? Because they don't have the political pressure anymore. And the parallels between 2008, as you referenced, and marriage equality and where we are right now are so amazing and yet ironic that Joe Biden is right in the middle of this again. So the fact that Senator Harris is his running mate and she was the co-sponsor of the MORE Act in the Senate and has very strong opinions and she's been very vocal publicly about them. About cannabis. And as you referenced earlier, she made a comment during the vice presidential debate. I think that she actually is going to be a very positive influence on him as we go through this process next year, as we go through executive action, as we go through action on Capitol Hill potentially. And I think the big question in my mind is, do they move off of the position that they are currently in at all prior to next year if they win? And then also,
What do they do if a bill is to pass Congress and ends up on President Biden's desk? Does he sign it? And I think that he will, to your point earlier about kind of getting more in line with the Democratic Party. And we know full well that the left in the Democratic side is going to be more vocal in 2021 than they were this time around. They're going to feel much more empowered. There's going to be a lot of nervous people on Capitol Hill running for re-election, especially some of those in the Senate. And I think that cannabis is an issue that they're going to need to harness in order to win, and they're going to let the White House know.
John, and we'll go over to Nick.
Yeah, so, I think it's time for the apology tour for the, the crime bill of the 90s. I mean, quite frankly, like, we still have a lot of senators who were there, who voted for it, including Biden, right? And what the effect of that was disproportionately impacting, Black and brown communities throughout this country, right? And they have now, if and when Biden wins, they have rallied behind a person who voted for that act, right? Who supported it, was one of the champions of it. And, I think everybody now admits that it was a huge mistake. And part of that is what has been the over-policing of cannabis. And I think every Democrat, right, immediately, with all the civil unrest that has gone on in this country, is going to have to take a hard look at least making sure that cannabis is no longer illegal federally, where we are putting people in jail for it. And as soon as you start having that conversation, which needs to happen right away, it has to happen right now. As soon as you start having that conversation, then all of these other things fall into place. Well, if it's not going to be illegal and we're going to, let everybody out of jail who's in jail for it now, which is a moral imperative, what are we going to do with it? And so I don't think that with that history, that historical context for this, that it's a topic that can be ignored by Congress for a long time.
I'll bring it back to you. I think, John, I grinding away at it, right? I mean, Chris has been working at this and on this issue. Chris, I don't want to disclose age, but you probably 20 years, right? This cannabis legalization is not something that has happened overnight, nor will it, regardless of who's victorious next week. And so again, I come back to this this idea that is the industry and advocates, we need to continue to grind away. Look, you ask how do you get opponents, right, generally Republicans, to change their mind on this? Show them where their voters are. Right. Show them, get back to the roots of demonstrating to them patients who live in their district, veterans who need access to cannabis as medicine. Run down that veteran narrative. Veterans are still stuck in a very challenging position where they rely on a federal health system that is not effectively serving them and are choosing cannabis, which has been safer and more reliable as medicine for them, yet they're exposed, their VA rights are exposed because they're technically breaking federal law. So we've got to get back to showing and demonstrating to these lawmakers personally the patients that they're helping, the lives that they're changing, the individuals who are no longer going to jail for something that is incredulous that they went to in the first place. And then, look, I mean, this is an industry. Show them the jobs, show them the revenue. I know the industry was pretty effective a few years ago in getting legislatures out to see what a cultivation facility looks like, what a retail location looks like. I think a lot of that, I think some of that was kind of lost the last couple of years because it just was. But one thing that I remind myself, you have to remember a lot of these legislators, they haven't seen the cannabis industry. They haven't experienced it. They don't have firsthand knowledge. And so it comes back to grinding away. Comes back to grinding away, getting incremental wins and demonstrating to legislators how this works for them.
Yeah, I would agree with, I mean, I would agree with everything that's been said on this particular issue. I can't understate the importance of getting elected officials out to see these facilities. We've done lots of tours of our facilities with electeds in a number of states, including some who have been on the fence about this issue before they came. And when they walk through and they see the security protocols in place, they see the professionalism, the SOPs, how happy the workers are, the jobs that are being created in their districts, it helps change their mind. That on top of the number one thing that we've seen turn political opinions on this, or politicians' opinions on this, is meeting patients or having somebody in their family suffer from an illness and see a benefit for medical cannabis. And so that one-on-one personal interaction, I think, is incredibly important. And then there's also appealing to their political self-interest. And that's a little bit of a different argument, I think, when you're dealing with Democrats or dealing with Republicans. But the reality is, this issue is overwhelmingly popular. Medical marijuana enjoys close to 90% support nationwide. Full legalization enjoys 60%+ support nationwide. It's even higher among young voters. The Republican Party in particular has a problem right now with young voters and voters of color. And this issue is overwhelmingly popular amongst those voters. And if the Republican Party wants to find a way to not lose those voters for a generation, this is it. Getting them to come around on this issue is a great way to do it. Similarly for Democrats, if they want to continue to hold those voters, right, they need to give those voters what they want. Give them the issue, one of the issues that they voted for you for in the first place. I don't want to come off here as anti-Republican on this issue, because I don't think this is a partisan issue. And in fact, what we're seeing amongst the Republican Party, by and large, is that rather than this being a partisan issue, it's a generational issue. Young Republicans, by and large, Republicans under the age of 50 or so, they're majority in our favor. And I mean that, and I mean elected officials, right? I don't just mean the voting public, but Republicans in general are about 50% supportive of this issue as a whole, young Republicans even more so. But amongst elected officials, younger Republicans, by and large, are there with us. It's the older Republicans who are still mostly stuck in this outdated war on drugs mentality. And unfortunately, if you look around leadership in the Senate, it's not the youngest group of people, right? I mean, it's a lot of, septa and octogenarians there, and Mitch McConnell, himself included. So this is not an issue with the Republican Party rank and file. This is an issue with Republican leadership right now in the House and Senate. And so part of it is just a matter of time, right? Like, there's only so long the septuagenarians are going to be there. And this next wave of younger Republicans who are coming up, I think, are going to be a lot better on this issue. And we need to show them as a party why it is politically beneficial for them to get on board with this issue now, so that they don't continue to hemorrhage support amongst young voters who, those young voters are going to be voting for a lot longer than the 70 and 80 year olds.
Yeah.
David, Chris points out that this is a bipartisan issue. It's very popular on both sides. Is the sell to Republicans different than the sell to Democrats?
No. I think that we've touched on all of the important issues. I would probably lead with the economic benefits on the Republican side. So jobs, tax revenue for states that their budget deficits, they're suffering significant budget deficits, and just general economic benefit for the country as we come out of COVID. But I could not agree with more with everything that Chris just said. This is not a partisan issue. And I went around to both campaigns with my little bag of tricks, and I tried to sell them on the electability of cannabis, and neither one of them bought. We know how far the Biden campaign was willing to go, which isn't very far, although it's historic, but it's still not far enough. And the Trump campaign was not willing to embrace it. They bashed the SAFE Banking Act on the Republican side over and over and over again, using talking points that they got from leadership. So I think that they're not understanding the power of cannabis, but I think that that's going to change going into the 2022 cycle. We're getting more and more Republican legislators in state capitals and on Capitol Hill asking us to come in and talk to them about how do we talk about cannabis, because we don't know how to do it, and help us to understand how we message it. And also, if a state like South Dakota, with their two Republican senators and their one Republican House member, gets this ballot initiative done, those members are going to have to take another look at cannabis and their policy position. And that's just one example. But we're seeing it all over the place, and we're going to see a lot more activity next year. That's going to have a direct influence on these Republican lawmakers on the Hill, and they're going to change their tune. So if I've got to come up with 60 votes for a full legalization package next year, and the filibuster is still in place, and we've got to hit 60, I'm going to be trying to find 10 Republican senators. And these ballot initiatives are really key this time around to influencing those folks and to get that 10.
Yeah, to just follow up on that really quickly, like one of the best things about Illinois now 10 months into legalization is a lot of my Republican friends in Illinois are now thanking me, right? They're thanking me for $102 million in tax revenue that they wouldn't have had if we didn't legalize cannabis here. And now, and actually they've all now seen that, you know, the boogeyman does not show up. It is not the end of the world. Like, we create jobs, good paying jobs for people. And having those Republicans now talk to Republican congressmen who are in the state of Illinois, and having those congressmen talk to Senate, like, we have to do a lot of that. And that's another thing we do, is getting those Republican voices who are champions. You mentioned Speaker Boehner earlier, you know, folks like that, it's critical. And the tide is turning. You know, again, Chris made the point, the Senate's just old. We got to work on that.
Young people, go run.
That's right.
You guys are, I mean, we've talked a lot of politics here, but you are all publicly traded companies. What are you hearing from your investor base on the election? Are they worried? Are they sitting tight? Are they, like, you know, what's the feedback that you're hearing from them? Good, bad, and indifferent.
I think they're asking a lot of the same questions that you guys are asking. Right? It's I mean, really, it's not so much feedback. It's a lot more questions. It's a lot more, you know, what does it mean if Biden wins? What does it mean if Biden wins, but the Republicans hold the Senate? What does it mean if it's a Democratic sweep? And so the conversation, I mean, the conversations that I've been having with investors and that my team has been having with investors around the election sounds a lot like the conversation that we're having right now on this panel. They want to know the same things. I mean, I will say, I think if we see a Democratic sweep and we win four out of five for all five of these initiatives, probably a good thing for public company stock values. I mean, we tend to see when, you know, when ballot initiatives pass, you know, when there's positive election news, you see you tend to see a bit of a run, you know, of buying publicly traded cannabis companies. You probably will see that in this case. Some of that may already be baked in a little bit because the polling has been so positive that people may already be buying now. So maybe you don't see quite as big of a jump as you might otherwise. But I think by and large, particularly a Democratic sweep of Washington would be a pretty positive signal to investors. I think, and look, the investment community tends to be a fairly conservative group, tends to be much more Republican leaning than the country at large. And even, you know, even amongst the investment community that we've been speaking to, by and large, they're rooting for a Democratic sweep this year if they're heavily invested in cannabis. So, you know, I like to say, you know, Republicans often, we often say Republicans tend to vote their financial self-interest. So in this case, I'd say, you know, vote like a Republican and vote Democrat.
I have a follow-up question for you. We don't have much time left, but I'd like to get this question in there because I asked it to David on our fireside chat, but we were pressed for time there as well. But I, like Ann said, the next 2 weeks are going to be contentious. It doesn't begin and end on November 3rd. In the event that we have a contested election, does that affect the states that have cannabis on the ballots? Because like we said, it takes a long time. There's a big interval between legalization and market open. There's, you know, in some cases, 14 months, 20 months, 47 months in the case of Maine. Does a contested election, does that affect what happens with the ballot initiatives in New Jersey, South Dakota, Arizona, and so on and so forth?
So, I mean, I can jump in on that. I don't think it does. The reason, I mean, frankly, the reason being the states where we have ballot initiatives are not really the states that we're worried about a contested election. Right, New Jersey, there's not much a question about who's going to win at the presidential level in New Jersey. Arizona is a swing state, but Arizona is one of the states that is, or they're already counting mail-in ballots. Arizona has been a vote by mail election, a vote by mail state for many years, or at least they've had a strong vote by mail option for many years. So they are very well accustomed to counting ballots in advance of the election. So I expect we're going to know who wins Arizona, both in the presidential level as well as on the ballot initiative level on election night or by the next morning. Montana and South Dakota are both, and Mississippi are all very small states. There's not a lot of ballots to count in those states. So I think we're going to have results in all of the election, all the ballot initiatives, either on election night or by the morning after, irrespective of what happens. If we had an initiative in a state like Pennsylvania or Wisconsin or Michigan, which does not allow ballot counting to start until the day of the election, that could be a little bit of a bigger issue. But thankfully, the states that we are looking at for the elections, that doesn't seem like it's going to be a problem. We should know that night or the next morning.
John, David, or Nick?
I agree
with everything Chris said.
Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, but look, this thing's going to be decided. The hundreds of court challenges will be decided by December the 8th, so that we can proceed to the counting of the Electoral College votes. And it may drag out if we've got some states like Florida, North Carolina, et cetera, that are razor thin. We will see this drag out until December the 8th. And potentially to the highest level. But if this is a 5-6 point advantage win for Biden or Trump in any one of these states, then this is going to be settled relatively quickly. And keep in mind, too, that if we see early on Tuesday night a victory for Vice President Biden in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Florida, this thing is over. And they will call it, the media will call it for Vice President Biden probably before midnight. So it'll, of course, still be contested, and there'll be plenty of initiatives that will go to court and will need to be finalized before that December 8 deadline. But this has the potential to be an early evening. It's just going to depend on voter turnout and whether those early swing states go in his favor.
John, final thoughts?
I agree with that. I personally, I'm an optimistic guy. I think we're going to know on election night. I think we're going to know early. I think all the trends that I'm seeing are headed that way. I think Democrats are going to take the Senate, although that'll be close. You know, that'll be within a seat or two. To paraphrase Winston Churchill, right? The politics is the ability to predict today, tomorrow, next week, next year, and then to explain to everybody why your predictions didn't happen. I'll go out on a limb here, and I'm going to say both Graham and McConnell will lose, and it'll be a total, it'll be a grand slam home run for, I'm kidding.
Not great. Lindsey Graham, really?
I'll look like you guys will have me on every one of these from now on if those things happen.
We'll be mentioning you in the same sentence as Joe Namath. Jeez. And Nick, I can't imagine you're that optimistic, are you?
I'm optimistic, but I have no predictions. What I'm focused on right now is regardless of the outcome, whether it's federal or it's state level, next Tuesday, we have a lot of work in front of us, and we're just going to continue. We're just going to take that next step. And I want to come back to what I think is really the most critical moment for cannabis. And that has been being deemed an essential business. It hasn't been overnight. Chris is a testament to this. He's been working on legalization for a long time, but it is it can't be underestimated as to how important it is. And regardless of what happens on Tuesday, I think most of the government affairs professionals in the cannabis industry will just keep moving forward with the momentum that we currently have.
Excellent.
And can I add one thing, I've said this all week, I'm going to say it on this one as well. If you haven't voted, go and vote. It doesn't matter which party you vote for, which way you lean, just go and vote. And if you are a cannabis voter, this is a critically important election for us as an industry. Go out and vote.
Yes, co-sign all of that. Thank you guys so much. I think this has been a really informative chat. David Culver, Chris Crane, John Sullivan, Nick Etten. Thank you guys so much. We'll be watching very closely, and maybe we can do another show after we all have calmed down and accepted everything.
On December 8th, maybe.
On December 8th.
Perfect.
Yes,
that's a significant day for you Sunday school students out there. All right. Well, thank you. And Anne, you were a wonderful co-host. So thank you for
being my captain
for this episode.
Thank you. My pleasure.
All right. Well, thank you, folks. I believe we're going to sign off and have a great rest of the week and happy Halloween.
When your life depends on it, when everything is on the line, you've got to get real about addiction treatment. Only Caron offers 65 years of medical expertise in evidence-based treatment with real, proven results. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Caron patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. So if you're ready for something real, visit caron.org/real today. Caron. Real results. Real care. Real about recovery.
This episode is brought to you by Verizon. Get a Verizon Business Unlimited plan from the network businesses rely on. Hey, Monica, with 5G Ultra Wideband in many more cities, you get up to 10 times the speed at no extra cost.
Hello, downloads in no time.
Plus, unlimited premium data and hotspot data to keep the signal flowing and your teams going. Come in or book an appointment with a Verizon business expert to find the right plan for your team. 5G Ultra Wideband available in over 1,700 cities with Business Unlimited Pro 2.0 smartphone plan. Speed comparison is to median Verizon 4G LTE speeds. Download speeds may vary depending upon network and coverage conditions and content optimization for 5G Ultra Wideband.